Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Another difficult week for ground conditions, costs continuing to rise, lost performance at grass and little or no spring tillage crops in the ground. This week I'm joined once again by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan. And later in the show we'll hear from Moorpark's Lawrence Chalou, who has joined us to talk all things clover and nitrogen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Adam, we'll start with the quick fire round. I look to you first in terms of a question. I actually only have the one question in for you here this week. Remember, folks, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, ask Adam, what do you do in this situation? I have a Charley bull that worked perfect last year, but I have a number of autumn calving cows that have repeated now 3 or 4 times. I got the vet out and he sampled him and he said he wasn't overly happy, but I've no written report back yet. And I also blood tested the cows that were repeating. And again, I'm waiting to see. What would Adam advise? Adam, talk to me.
Yes, look, I suppose maybe there's still not definitive, issues with the bull or the cows, but generally, if a vet isn't overly happy, that wouldn't be good language for me in terms of taking a chance on that bull. If there are any issues at all, you're generally better to nip them in the bud fairly early and go and replace the bull. Or possibly, I was talking to a couple of guys this week in terms of early spring calving cows, and they're using it. Maybe look at it's still very negative not to cattle out, but in terms of AI in some of those early calving cows that are still in, it's a little bit of an opportunity there, and they're going in with sort of replacement genetics that they can maybe breed a few early heifers maybe next year, because cows aren't out and obviously bull inside isn't ideal either, so they're using it as an opportunity. But anyway, that person there, I'd say look at replace bull or go in an AI your autumn calves.
Excellent, Adam. Thanks for that. Chat to you in a bit. Darren, one quick fire in here for you. Just looking at this new sheep scheme, area I'm located in here in Donegal, there's a good operator with a mobile shower unit. Is that out under the new scheme? There are very few farms around here that a mobile plunge dipper could suit, as there is nowhere to hold spent dip. Darren, this is where we talk about the new sheep welfare scheme in the main show, but this is a quick fire related to it. Talk to me here about the mobile shower unit.
Yeah, good few questions around that, Jack. Mobile shower units is out. There's no product license for use in a mobile shower unit. So if it's a mobile unit, it has to be a mobile plunge dipping unit. And yeah, look, there's plenty of questions coming in around what happens to spent sheep dip and that. Maybe it's something we'll probably take into the main show, because there's a few little bits on that we can take.
Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, a couple of quick fires in for you. couple of comments, it's fair to say as well. First one, let me just read this out properly. Hi, Jack. I'd like to say this about Aidan's remark about trusting the science on CBV on Jersey Cross calves. It's the same for a dairy farmer putting a Shirley Cross cow through the parlour and being told to trust the science on her EBI. Good luck filling the jar on that, let alone the tank. I'll take that as a comment, Aidan, on that, because there's another one related to that that came in again. This is a long quick fire, but I'll just give you the gist of it. Just a comment on last week's podcast for Aidan and the CBV and the dam breed and the mark board. So this, the context of this, Aidan, is I think you mentioned that, listen, you know, we need to trust the CBV figure, and I suppose emphasize that more so than potentially the dam breed. So this farmer has said, okay, any data on the blue card must be shown on the board. Okay, that's his first point. Second, the dam's breed has a major influence on the genetic potential of all calves. It influences over 50%. Aidan would expect to see the dam's lineage in the AI catalogue. Number three, EBI has driven carcass weight of dairy bred stock down. Crossbreeding with Jerseys has driven it down more. This has driven all confidence that dairy beef farmers have in crossbred calves into the ground. Simple fact is it takes too long and too much cost to finish these calves. Fourth point, the landscape of the calf trade has changed and is changing further. If and when shipping goes, we will have a serious problem. Crossbred herds need to be bringing more beef potential into their cows. Factories are now complaining about lighter carcasses. This is filtering back to farmers. Long term, it won't be penalties for overweight carcasses. It will be penalties for light carcasses. We could probably argue that one. Has Chagas of the ICBF done a comprehensive study on the carcass weight of progeny based on the dam makeup of the dairy herd? I believe not. Aidan, so you struck a chord or a discord with a couple of guys on that piece around the CBV. You have a bit more on that in the paper this week.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I've elaborated more, Jack, in the paper, and I stand over my comments that I made last week. I think they're fair in the great scheme of things. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that if you're using a really high beef merit bull on a dairy cow. That calf will have good beef genetics, and that's going to be reflected in the CBV, the commercial beef value. So even if the dam breed, if the dairy cow breed is poor for beef, like a crossbred animal, for example, if you use a really good beef bull on that animal, you're going to get a decent enough calf, albeit not as good as using a suckler cow on a beef suckler cow on a beef bull. You know, so that's the Rolls Royce. We're trying to get a decent calf out of all our cows. So the CBV is something that looks at that. It looks at those figures. It takes into account, obviously, the dam and the breed. So you have that's reflected in the currently in the mark boards and the blue cards, but the FRX, JX, or FR, or and a whole load, whatever else the breeds are. So that's there, and it's real. What I'm saying is that you're by keeping that on the board. You're penalizing farmers that have bred really high CBV calves, because all people who are buying calves are looking at is there an X there somewhere? And that X, Jack, could come from, it could have been 7 or 8 generations ago since there was a cross using that cow. But that X still carries through to numerous generations.
Okay.
Even though they might not have used a Jersey bull for 10 or 15 years. So for me, that's a problem. You know, that's not right. Like that is not right. There's no two ways around that. ICBF say that it's a law. You know, it's the department right. The department say that it's the EU law that has to stay on it. And once it's on the blue card, it has to be on the mark board. So that's why they're retaining it. But that's for me, I think that's an issue. But the final point here is that. By looking at the CBV, we're not ignoring the dam breed. The dam breed is integrated into the CBV. You know, so that's there. It's real. The only thing is that there's better science around CBV than there is just by looking at the dam breed, because that could be generations ago.
Okay, we'll get a peep at what you have this week, and we might touch up on it again next week, Aidan. That Second quick fire, Aidan, for you. I found an article on the sync of heifers. I found your article on the synchronization of heifers interesting, but you never mentioned the possibility of a bad bull. I have synced my heifers for the past number of years and I found it a great job, but got bad results this spring. And when I spoke to my vet about it, he asked me about bulls. And I had a dud bull, had a bad conception rate of 33%, while the other four bulls were 60% and up. AI company choosing to ignore me, even though my vet has another client to use same bull and had 0% conception. I'm more of a talker. Give me a ring if you want. So, Aidan, yeah, bull fertility. And I suppose what the farmer knows or doesn't know.
Yeah, well, the farmer knows if they run the EBI breeding report on, the breeding report on ICBF. They'll get, after they do the scanning, they can work out then how many cows or heifers are in calf to each bull. And the percentage conception rate will show up there. So the information is there for the farm, right? And there is variation, Jack. And that 30% for some bulls is common, and even lower is common as well, Jack. Like, so you, some bulls that perform very poorly and more bulls that perform a lot better. It's interesting to hear the farmer say that the vet has also heard that that same bull performed badly on the other farm. According to, you know, ICBF, we're looking at on a wider scale. Their variation exists, they accept that, but that it's not necessarily just one bull common across the whole country is performing badly. So there's this is what the answer we get back, that it's okay, it's bad in some herds, but that bull might also perform better in other herds. It's probably a coincidence that, you know, the vet knows two clients that are having it. But there is going to be variation, Jack, and that's not going to go away. Particularly with sex semen, there's a bigger variation
in bull fertility. You mean,
Yeah.
So there's going to be good brands and bad bulls, and you have to try. The farmer you're saying then has to try and mitigate that. Aidan, is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So by using more bulls, because it's minimizing the risk. But that has always been there. I think only that maybe the information wasn't available before.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's fair to necessarily blame younger bulls or genomics for this. I think the variation was always there, including, you know, in proven bulls. Okay. But the risk is greater now with genomic bulls because they're younger. There's less field fertility data on them.
You can feel the frustration at the same time, Aidan, from the farmer side of things. He's bought this AI straw in good faith and paid good money, the same as the and he's hoping, or he or she is hoping, that the straw will be up to a certain standard based on, I call it, lab results from the AI stations.
Yeah, and they've also spent 30 or 40 euros on getting the cow to come into heat at that fixed time. So there's an extra incentive there to get the cow and or the heifer and calf.
Yeah.
But I don't like. I don't know what the answer is, to be honest, on this one, because it's you know, I don't think the AI companies are going out selling dud bulls intentionally. Some bulls won't perform as well as others.
I'll accept that, Aidan. But is there a threshold that if you're going less than 20% conception rate or whatever, that listen. There has to be some comeback, no?
But see, you could argue that you know, those cows are heifers weren't in heat.
Yes.
They were bred later than the other bulls, you know. So there's
is there a national picture then that could come in on that? That, you know what I mean? The AI station are the only ones that have the conception rates for that sire over a large population of.
Well, ICBF have it as well, yeah.
Yeah.
So the two organizations, the AI company and ICBF, will know that. To be honest, Jack, I'd say after my gut feeling of this, and I, you know, we need to check this out further. Mm-hmm. My gut feeling would be that if a bull is performing poorly in the field, they're not going to use them the following year.
Yeah.
You know, that's my gut. They don't want hassle. They want good conception rates. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
But that's not good for the farmer who's the victim of this bull.
Right.
So the only way I can see around it, getting around it, is by using plenty of them. So the target is use 8 bulls per 100 cows. So even if you only have 30 heifers to be bred, you should still be using 8 bulls across those heifers.
Yeah.
Not 2 or 3 bulls.
To you, Aidan, back to you in...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Minute, Adam, coming back to you. Wet weather. Will that suit the French lads that are coming to Dublin this weekend, Adam, do you reckon? Or well, is it an advantage for the Leinster boys that they'll be so used to it?
They've been in Cork for a week, so I'm sure they're well used to it. And I hear they're getting a lot of rain down there and getting used to the diet. It's been another rough week, Jack. We've had over almost 30 mil of rain up in Ballyhays again. An awful wet day Wednesday, which was really undone. Maybe some of the good work that was done at the weekend. We actually had some great drying conditions at the weekend. But look at it to give you confidence, maybe in terms of an east wind coming, that it might change it fairly quick when it does come. But just there's no sight yet of that coming. You know,
is it fair to say, Adam? Again, I was just looking at. I mean, he escaped a lot of the rain at the weekend, whereas the east of the country, usually it's the other way around in fairness, but the east of the country and the south got it. And you didn't get that real heavy rain at the weekend.
No. We had a good weekend up with us. And you know, the thing was starting to turn a wee bit in terms of Yodel and Lamb's out, or they're starting to look good again. But no, we're back to the same again. Back Wednesday, a whole wet day. Thursday, another wet day down with us. Yeah. So look at the turnout, still 2-3 weeks away, I'd say.
And Adam, in terms of problems, having stock inside around yards, numbers that you wouldn't normally have at this time of the year, like that causes problems in its own right.
Sure is, Jack. Like, straw at €55 the bale, you can't blame people for sort of sparing it, you know, if they can at all, especially in creep areas. So you might bed calving pens really well, and because it's important, but you might take a chance on creep areas maybe an extra day or two to try and reduce the amount of straw that's going in there. But look, that's leading to issues, and a couple of coccidiosis issues this week. That's what we'll say from, you know, calves ingesting maybe some fecal material or whatever, maybe around a trough or something like that, in terms of licking off gates or just lying maybe in not ideal conditions in terms of adequate straw, and that's a big one, because once that calf, we'll say, gets that coccidiosis, it's sort of putting out oocytes out behind then, we'll say, and that's thousands and millions of oocytes then for other cows to pick up. So the advice is that if you have a case of coccidiosis, you're to go in there with the whole batch of calves, to, because the chances are that they're going to get it as well. And look, it's a real bad one. Your calf can really dry up, it can strain it. A blood scour would be traditionally maybe what it's called, back years ago. So that's one. Another one cropping up is pneumonia. So, maybe a lot of calves now in creep areas, again, maybe stocking red high, maybe conditions not ideal, all cattle in sheds. You know, usually this time of year there'll be some cattle going out, so the pressure will be coming off sheds, but there's huge pressure around yards at the moment, and little bits of pneumonia. And the last one is then black leg. Some cases I've heard of black leg were weaning, especially autumn-born weanings that were grazing outside. Maybe that feel that they were grazing is getting a bit cut up, the soil is becoming exposed. That black leg, we'll say, or that clostridial, we'll say, disease lives in the soil. So if that becomes exposed to animals that are nosing about in soil or whatever, that can lead to issues around black legs. So vaccine is there for that one. It's important that two vaccines go in there, two booster shots. An initial shot and then a booster shot 4 weeks later.
Yeah. And I've heard of problems even from guys that maybe weren't traditionally blacklegging, Adam, that they're seeing a little bit of it this year. Like, and when you see it, you don't get a second chance at it.
Well, no, absolutely not. You get one dead. But where it has been issues in the past. But that's another thing in terms of all the work that's going on around yard at the moment. It's really easy to forget maybe a routine vaccine or something, because there's so much other work going on in terms of bed and creep areas, maybe buying silage, feeding meal. It's just so much, and it's going on all winter or whatever. So it's easy to forget about maybe a spring routine vaccine there. So it's important to keep on top of that.
The impact of the front page story, the weather is spilling over into the mar trade now, it's fair to say, Adam.
Yeah, it is. I guess those traditional grass buyers are stepping out now, Jack, in terms of some of them were actually speaking to some of them over the last couple of weeks. They were saying, gee, we're going to buy away here and we're going to fill the shed, because when grass does come and when dry weather does come, this trade is going to go bananas. So many of them were taking that opportunity, but they've now, they're full and they're stepping out now. So even speaking to George Candler in Kilkenny, he was saying the stud farms even aren't out yet. Usually April time is their time for buying bullocks, and that would have really generated a big demand around that sort of South Midlands and sort of South area for those bullocks and grass bullocks. They're not there. And speaking to Sean Leahy in Corran, he was saying, you know, that Angus maybe a little bit back as well. That traditional, you know, grass buyer for those Angus or Herefords, which he would have a lot of down in Cork, definitely back a wee bit. And look at our map, its database tells the story. We're back, I think, 22 cent there on those sort of lighter stores, which is, you know, 80, 90 euros a head. So look, we really need that weather to turn and we need to get those grass buyers out again.
Mm. You were in Westmeath this week on a big sucker herd.
Yeah, so this is Gigginstown. Look at a famous, you know, pedigree Angus herd down there, 200 cows, really sort of unique system in terms of calving outside, especially the autumn herd. So 100 cows calving autumn, 100 in spring, cows them out on stubbles. And I was saying to Joe Mahoney, the farm manager, I was saying, what do you do with a foot down? We'd be maybe used to Charlie's at home and maybe limousines or whatever. And there's always, you know, you have to be there at calving time. But he was saying, no, the calve away, puts a feeder at one end of the field, the opposite end of the drinker, and reckons between walking and exercise that the cows are really, really fit to calve. So pretty unique one there. When the cow calves, she goes into the calf goes into a quad trailer, and they bring her out to a grass patch. So yeah, I suppose a different system. He was saying two sections in 22 years. So look, that's one of the benefits, I suppose, of the Angus breed. But Joe has some good comments there and good comments on the future and where the thing is going. And I know, you know, it's Gigginstown stud and everything, but Joe was running that as a pretty good ship in terms of commercial realities on that farm, you know, and in terms of trying to do the best he can in terms of genetics. Had a lot of comments around ICBF in terms of goalpost changing as well, as regards, he was just saying, as regards to a long-term game, and he's breeding all his own placements there, like a lot of other farmers, and putting in genetics now that are going to maybe come back into the herd in 27, 28. But if things are moving and changing, it's very, very hard to pitch where you're going with that.
You were also in Roscommon, not far away, but you're also in Roscommon again. And the line of thinking here was on the organics job. Organics is big in Roscommon.
It is. It's one of the biggest counties, actually, one of the largest growth in the country in terms of organics. I'd say a dry stock thing, maybe, Jack, in terms of entitlements coming back and trying to shore up some of the payments that's coming in. And look, it was a really good evening. The Organic Association, the Good Herdsman had a speaker there as well, John Fennessy. And look, I suppose I don't want to be negative to organics or anything like that. It was a really positive night. But, you know, the farmers in the room, and I actually asked the farmers in the room, did they go into organic farming for a passion for organics and to want to go down that route, or did they go into organic farming for the money? And everybody put their hand up for the money. And you just wonder, again, are we putting the cart before the horse? We talked about the leakage into the conventional market for that organic, you know, stock, and where all that's going. I suppose Good Herdsman was there and they were really encouraging people to finish more cattle during the winter as opposed to the spring, because obviously everybody in organics won't want to feed meals. You'll have a traditional summer finish, we'll say, for cattle, but that doesn't, I guess, for a market, that doesn't do them very well. But, you know, a meal at 8.50 a ton, it doesn't bode it. You know, it's not very conducive to winter finishing, and really organic beef at the moment, I think, is 6.10 a kilo. That's what Good Herdsman is on in terms of their price and their structure. But it would want to be probably a lot higher for the winter finisher there to make it, appeasable to winter finishing. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of beef price, Adam, give us a feel for the trade and which way it's going.
Sure, look, it's still steady, Jack. That's been the word I've used, I think, for the last 3 weeks. No big up. Cows probably the highlight of the trade this week. 470, 480 for good Orgreg cows. Bullocks working off for a 510, 515. Heifers 520 for 25. Foil meats is still top of the list there at 530 for bullocks, killing out between 300 and 400 kilos, and 535 for heifers. So across the water, it's pretty steady as well. Might have been a little bit of a peel back, maybe 1 pence or 2 pence across the water. Probably the 3 weeks of 4 day kills, Jack, helped factories manage everything as they went through. And I think you'll see definitely coming towards the end of April, I think beginning of May, supplies are going to tighten up more, and hopefully quotes will improve on the back of that.
Thanks, Adam. Darren, just coming off the back of that quickfire question there on the sheep welfare scheme, obviously the details, like this has been talked about a good bit, Darren, you know, the kind of the €8 per yo for completing the two tests. And I think you touched off it there and predicted pretty right in terms of what was going to be involved in terms of to claim down this €8 per yo.
Jack, good to see the details coming out around it, and look, a timely boost for sheep farmers given the challenges to stay with weather and everything. Just to recap, say it's sort of Category A and Category B options. Farmer has to do a Category A and a Category B option. The Category A is shearing and body condition scoring, and the Category B is plunge dipping or Clostridial disease vaccination. So if we just say it's been literally 30 seconds in each of those, the shearing is essentially you shear your yo.
Most guys are going to do that, aren't they?
Most people will do that, Jack. So you shear your yo's. If you have a contractor coming in, you get a receipt from the contractor, or else you have a copy of your, say, wool sales, and that just sort of tallies with the number of sheep that you have. Body condition scoring on that side is you have to take body condition score two times during the year, and you have to act on that. What means by acting on is if you had yours at condition score 1 or 2 that you put a feed plan in place to address their condition.
Shearing is going to be the one, Darren, for Category A.
Okay. Shearing is going to be the one, Jack, for 95% of farmers. It's going to be the one.
Category B, vaccination or plunge dipping?
Yeah, small bit more trickier, Jack. And I suppose there is some questions coming in around this. Farmers thinking that it's Clostridial disease vaccination from now on, and all of these actions have to be done by the 15th of October. But farmers can already have that action done. So the scheme year runs
from backdated effectively, like.
Right. Exactly. So backdated to the 1st of January. So 1st of January to the 31st of December next year, but the actions have to be done by the 15th of October. So if a farmer has, say, vaccinated their ewes for Clostridial disease vaccination, that's okay. If they haven't done their ewes and they want to do, say, an alternative and do their lambs, well, then they can do the lambs and that'll count. We have a question gone into the department whether you have to do all your lambs or just an equivalent number to the number of ewes that you have. And on the alternate option then on that is plunge dipping that we talked about, and that's either to carry out plunge dipping yourself or get a mobile contractor in to do plunge dipping. So they're the two. It's important to note this. So it's €4 for each category. But if you didn't do one, so if some farmers just did, say, sheep shearing, and this is a question that's coming up a lot, you'd be docked €4 plus there'd be a 50% penalty. So you'd be down to €2 per head. So there is, it's really aimed at farmers who do four tasks. Now, there has been a bit of a reaction around, say, the Category B, Jack. Some farmers saying that all we're doing is making up, say, pharmaceutical companies by promoting Clostridial disease vaccination, that will there be enough product? There was issues with supply and demand last year. But look, at where I see it, Jack, is it's money coming in. There is options there for farmers, and they have to weigh it up themselves and see if it suits their system. Yeah. But like it is an option, and the actions are there now for farmers to consider. Closing date is the 21st of May, so later than the BIS closing date. And you have to pick your actions. The number of sheep that you're going to be paid on is the average on your sheep census between 2020 or 2022, or if your 2023 sheep census is higher, you can opt for that.
Okay, but Darren, you mentioned the date, and if sheep farmers took nothing else from this chat, I mean, that'll come fairly quick now in a busy spring. It sounds like, you know, God, this is 5 weeks away, like, you know, but I mean, time doesn't be long moving now to get something like this kind of signed up for at this time of the year.
No, and like for an awful lot of people, Jack, what they're going to be doing it is that if they are doing their BIS applications over the next few weeks, that's the time to do it with your advisor if you're not doing it yourself. Now, it's pretty easy to do an agfood.ie, but it's just, I suppose, maybe as you said, to think about it, don't put it on the long finger. If you have a BIS, say, appointment, or you're doing your BIS yourself, well, now is the time to do the sheep the sheep return as well.
Excellent. Okay, well, so look, that's it. There's lots more. You have a full page, the Inside Bank page there on the in the journal this week on that. So I mean, without a doubt, like it's absolute essential reading for all sheep farmers in terms of this new sheep welfare scheme. The details are all there inside the back page on the Farmers Journal. Darren, I was meeting someone in the mart, and there was two pens of spring lambs came in. They were the only two, and it was a relatively small mart now, you know, and maybe it reflects in on the kind of the whole weather piece and all that's happening. Like, you know, it was a good sheep country, but there was two pens of spring lambs that came in. One group were five ram lambs, 55 kilos, so like they were born December time. And then, but there was another group then came in 12 lambs mixed, 40 kilos. The five heavy ones made 220. And the 12 lighter ones made 190. So they, you know, for the 40
kilo lighter lambs. Ones were good lambs, Jack. No, they were good lambs at that.
But it was interesting. Like they were the only two pens of spring lambs. The rest then was colyos and bits and pieces and golly, some of them colyos were making 200 euros as well.
Yeah, the colyos, Jack, has really taken off in the last week. And factories have been playing a chasing game for, I suppose, the last 2 months since the live export trade sort of took off again, and those sort of big prices, as you say, for heavy ewes came apparent. Factories have been handling small numbers of ewes. They've been trying to sort of keep in touch. They've been coming up maybe 10 cent, 20 cent, but this week they jumped 30 cents. So they're up to a quarter, 4 euros a kilo. And even at that, Jack, some of them, they are still not at a level of what the mart trade is. So if you take 4 euros a kilo, 45 kilo, say, carcass weight payment, sure, it's 180 euros. As you said there, some of them heavy euros are going easily topping the 200 euro mark. So it's, while the factory, say, costs have gone up, I think it's everyone, our farmers that have cool ewes need to just assess their options, because if you had a nice few ewes to go to the mart, to sell and heavy, like if they're going to kill heavier than the carcass weight in the factory, well, in the mart is definitely the place for them. And even so, even if they didn't kill to the maximum carcass weight, you need to just weigh up and see whether the mart is an option for you, because at the moment, that cool ewe trade is sort of trending ahead. Mm. As you said about the spring lambs, Jack, like the numbers are small. 774 spring lambs killed last week.
Wow.
Small in the overall thing. In the now, factories have been a bit more keen for spring lambs because hoggers are just so tight. There's been anywhere from a 10 to 20 cent increase in prices. And I'm hearing, Jack, prices anywhere from 9.50 to possibly not far off 10 euros a kilo, is if you took, say, producer group bonuses, confirmation bonuses, all that into account.
That's for 21 kilos, 21 kilo carcass,
no,
then, is it?
No. From 20 to 20 and a half.
Okay.
There would be some plants in the north that would be paying to 21 kilos, but in general, plants in the south is 20 to 20 and a half. Hoggets are still dominating the trade, Jack.
Right. Yeah. So does that lead into your theory that, listen, the guys are pulling them out? They're looking at the money. They're saying, japers, the money that's there now, why would I hold on to them? Why would I bring them through the year into the back end? There's got to be less hoggets available the back end and less yours bred this year.
Yeah, sure. If we look at, say, the mart we were at this week, we're in Dowra. Terry McGovern there, the mart manager, was telling me they had 2,300 sheep on offer. Very big sale for the time of year. Like he said, anywhere up 700-800 head. A combination, he said, of ewe hoggets, but plus also a combination of some farmers that might have normally traded directly with the factory, that because there's such intense demand in the mart, they're showing them in the mart to take advantage of that.
Wow.
But like he would put a stab on the ewe hoggets. Like he made one sort of remark that I think there was ewe hoggets in there. I think there were 45, 46 kilo sort of crossbred ewe hoggets. Same farmer would have had them, probably be selling in the territory of 150 to 170 in the back end of the year. And he got for them last week.
In April.
So like he said that he's seen, and other market managers are saying as well, they're seeing, say, maybe some Yo Hoggets appearing in small numbers, fives, eight, tens, where people are pulling off the lower ones. And then he said you come to a situation and you get someone that has a big bunch. David Quinn and Karen, you was telling me there was a farmer last week, normally have maybe 200 Yo Hoggets to sell in the back end. He showed 80 last week. And he said there's there's lots of demand, Jack, around him for silage, dairy farmers trying to replenish stocks, that type of thing. And he's probably getting prices higher now than what he might get in the back end, so taking out the lower quality ones, and he's just leaving himself more options.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And taking the potential cost piece out of it, as you say. I mean, there's been a lot of feed used over the last month, 6 weeks, that we thought was going to be sitting in yards for next winter. It's not there now. So potentially those guys, that's what they're going to do, is going to fill up winter feed for next year and take the money now. That's some shift, Aaron. Like, you know what I mean? To be up 700 or 800 sheep for a sale, you know, at this time of the year, like that's a very big shift up, isn't it? Like
a very big shift, Jack. Now, and like I'd say you could probably put maybe half of that probably down to maybe Yo Hoggets, and probably the other half to cull ewes coming, and probably hoggets or lambs that would have normally went direct to the factory. Okay. That's what's adding into it at the moment.
Darren, the weather piece, is there much to add to? We've touched off it, says you, in terms of, is there much to, from your side of things, like, is there much you reckon that farmer, that you, have you seen any improvement? Like, you didn't get it as bad in the West, I'll say, where the majority of the sheep are. You didn't get it as bad in the West over last weekend, but you've got, during the week, you've had a fair share of rain now as well.
Yeah, no, we didn't get it as bad in the West, but if we say, we do have to sort of acknowledge that there's a lot of sheep farmers around, that say the coast of Kerry, coast of West Cork, and like, if you take the timing, Jack, the timing is fierce bad here. That, like, if you look at, say, some flocks, hill flocks, lambing outdoors now, Jeannie, they got hammered on Monday and hammered on again on Wednesday. Like, and I heard some challenging stories now around mortality.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, that's, it's very disheartening, I suppose, when you look at that. But like, look at, thankfully, yesterday was a good bit milder. Today is a good bit milder again. And you'd hope that would continue next week, and at least we're not going to get the torrential rainfall or the deluges that we have. But like, there's no quick solution, Jack. Like, the couple of bits is look at you still need to be fed to try and have the best option of keeping milk yield up and trying to underpin performance in lambs. And like, this is going to go on, even if, say, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed that from the 17th that the weather forecast is good and we get an upturn, it'll still take a few weeks on a lot of sheep farms, because different to sort of Aidan or Adam, like, there's a lot of grass on some dairy farms, a lot of grass on beef farms, whereas the opposite is on sheep farms now, when the grass reserves have been depleted, fertilizer hasn't been applied, so it's going to take a few weeks to work out with it. In contrast to other farms where it's going to be, the challenge is grazing some of the grass.
Thanks, Darren. Aidan, just coming to you, and maybe just picking up, where we left off in terms of the breeding side of things. There was a couple of quick fires in there on the breeding, but you obviously have a couple of pages this week in the focus. I mean, it's kickoff time for breeding down south, at least, Aidan. Even this week, I'm sure there's in Munster, there's a lot of herds that have raised the flag for the start of breeding.
Yeah, Jack, and look, I mean, it's after coming on us very quickly, because we're still in winter mode. In many cases, you know, cows are still in the shed, they're being fed full silage diet and concentrate, whereas normally we'd have a month or 6 weeks of grazing in advance of this breeding season starting, and then you'd have cows in better conditions for that have lost their winter goats. They'd have, you know, they'd be really, really thriving in peak milk production, but we're not there this year now, and it's a concern, Jack, that, you know, the problems we're experiencing this spring could potentially follow through to next spring if we have lower conception rates for service and higher empty rates, you know, basically delayed calving next season.
Yeah, one of the pieces, and you hear a lot more about it, Aidan, it's the whole technology now around breeding, you know, and one aspect of that is collars, and for large herds in particular, trying to identify cows in heat is a challenge, you know. I look at it, it's a fact of numbers and the number of people that are around to kind of pick up cows and calf, or to pick up cows in heat and to, you know, do the milking and to bring them in from the fields and all that kind of stuff. It's a challenge, and you have an article here I see and that it's a very attractive headline. Do cow collars improve fertility? Question mark. I presume you go into a bit of detail on what that was. What was that article about?
Yeah, so look, Jack, I was basically just looking at data that LIC have put together over in New Zealand. So LIC look after the breeding program in New Zealand. You know, they're a company that supplies genetics, but they also look at the genetics as a country as a whole across all different herds. And I suppose they monitor then what's happening in terms of submission rate, six-week in-calf rate, conception rate on herds that have really good data included in it. So across this data set, there's about 2.4 million cows. So it's a really big data set. And they've compared herds that have what they call wearables. So that would be the automated heat detection aids. Mm. It could be collars, it could be boluses, ear tags, you know, whatever they're doing to... So wearables is the term, I suppose, that we should probably be using rather than collars ourselves. And there's 870 herds have those on, compared to 3,716 herds that don't have any wearables. So they're just using tail paint or other heat detection aids. And I suppose, Jack, look, the only benefit from the herds that have the wearables is that their submission rate was a little bit higher than the rest of the herds.
Right.
So 83.8% for those that have the wearables versus 80% that for those that don't. But for every other metric, 6 week in calf rate, the conception rate to first service, not in calf rate, they were slightly better, Jack, for the herds that don't have the wearables. So I said in the piece that there's no benefit. No, there's slight improvement for herds that don't have any wearables on. The breeding season was also shorter for the herds that don't have the wearables. So look, no benefit, Jack, in fertility performance is the takeaway I got from that massive data set in New Zealand based on last season's performance. Mm. Now, you know, that's the reality from New Zealand. You know, I do acknowledge in the piece that there is a big labor benefit to having the collars. And for me, I think that's where the benefit is of this technology as opposed to improving it. And the rationale for saying that they don't improve it is probably sound, Jack, because those technologies, those devices, they look at secondary signs of heat.
Yes.
So we all know that the primary sign of heat is a cow standing to be mounted. Now, those wearables, they actually can't detect that. Yeah. But they look at the other signs, so there's more movement, more activity in general, and they see a spike in activity, and that's, you know, corresponding to heat. And you know, obviously we see that with heat as well. With, you know, cows that are bullying, they do more walking, they do more bellowing, they do more messing around. Milk yield might drop, their rumination levels drop. They're monitoring all these things, and their algorithm then comes up to say that this cow's in heat. And you know, it's actually very, very effective at picking that up, but it's no better than tailgate.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, so as you say, the benefit isn't in the fertility per se, but there is a piece, definitely a kind of a farm effect in terms of it does benefits, there's labor benefits in terms of some of this automation that's going on. So great piece in that sort, lots of detail and lots of, as you say, it is a Kiwi trial, but there's big numbers.
It's not a trial now, Jack, as well. Okay. You know, it's just the data. It's not a control experiment, but it's just that.
Yeah,
but the size of the data is so big. You see,
you're using the power of the data or the scale of the data at least to kind of get over the controlled element of it. Like, because I mean, I presume there's 500 and 600 cows in these herds. In a New Zealand context, like, yeah. Will that be the same for Ireland? No, like there's lots of bits and pieces that you can kind of query. But no, excellent. The other piece that stood out for me is that synchrony piece, Aidan, in that focus. And the quick one of the quick fires there was related to that. You've put the heifer fixed time AI protocol there down the this week as well.
So this is something we've spoken about a good bit before, Jack, in the past, and the big increase in the number of herds doing fixed time AI in heifers compared to, we'd say, the traditional route would have been, you know, watch them for 7 days, give them a shot at PG, they'll come in the next 3 or 4 days, you bull them, and then maybe let off bulls. Overall, you're done and busted in 10 days. Whereas in the fixed time AI, you're putting the seeder or the prid in, you're giving them a range of hormones at different times, and as you say, the protocol is printed in the paper, and then you AI the cow in a certain time and a certain date. And it's all done and dusted. There's no heat detection required. But the variation in success rate for that is very mixed. I'm saying the piece is between 30% and 70%, depending on different herds. And for me, that's a massive variation. And we're putting in a huge investment, as I say, 35 to 40 euros a heifer. And when I talked to Stephen Butler, the Chagas researcher, who's kind of spearheading a lot of these protocols, he's saying he sees this on the ground as well. And even experienced it in more packer times also. And the only thing he can put it down to is the fact that there's some of these heifers are underweight at breeding, or they're not cycling before they get the thing. And for me, there's a big risk this season, Jack, because heifers are still in the shed in most farms. They should be outside grazing, as I say, same for cows, for the last month or 6 weeks, or 2 months even. They're not. They're going to be at greater risk of being underweight. Maybe they're not bullying. You know, is this a year to maybe press pause in that protocol if you have a lot of the herds that aren't, a lot of the heifers that aren't circling? I do know some farmers who are actually getting scanned. They're scanning their heifers first before they make the investment. So they're spending a couple of euro to get the heifer scanned. That the scanner will tell them if the heifer is cycling or not, and if they're suitable for the seeder.
Okay, word of caution is what you're saying, that listen, given the year that's in it, given the weather effect that's happening across all the country, that maybe just assess the situation, because I mean, as you say, there's no point in pouring good money after bad money, like, you know.
But it's back to the benefit of the collars or the heat detection aids is the same with the fixed time AI, that it reduces the workload because you're not watching heifers bullying, and which is, you know, everyone is tired, Jack. We're all killed from work, like, and you know, the weather is appalling and still is. And then, you know, we're still recovering from all that rain we had earlier in the week. So the morale for extra work is low. So the temptation would be to go for this again.
Yes.
But it could actually be worse if the heifers aren't right.
Like what we talked about previously, the 10-day job, I'll call it, you know what I mean? Watching them for 6-7 days and then coming in with your shot of PG, like the investment there isn't as big.
No, it's not as big as you're talking a shot of PG for probably 25-30% of the heifers. You know, the rest of them you'd expect will be coming in. For two-thirds of the heifers getting the shot, so it's a smaller investment, but you have the work involved in doing the heat detection. But the only thing is there is that you're only breeding the heifers that are actually cycling. So, you know, it's you're not wasting ice straws on heifers that aren't cycling. The ice straw is expensive now. If you're using the Sexima, Jack, you're talking 47 to 50 euro a straw.
Correct.
So it's twice as expensive as it was before.
No, brilliant. Excellent. Two great points on the breeding side of things. I mean, Aidan, just pulling back a little bit from the breeding and talking about kind of the weather and the grass impact, and you know, we see the results coming in from the co-ops. Milk supply is, you know, it's back right across the country, like, you know what I mean? Particularly, you know what I mean, the south and east, like, you know, there's no doubt about it, like, you know, but it's back 10-15%.
Yeah, it's massive, Jack. And you know, there's some areas that are way worse affected. Like, you talk to the East Coast, they've got a right hammer, and the Southeast got a right hammer this earlier on this week, and that really set them back. Now it's going to set them back dramatically. Like, so you're talking about a huge impact at farm level, and like, when you're seeing the amount of costs going out the gate in terms of feed, buying in silage, and then you're seeing milk supplies down 10-15% or even more in some farms. Like, it's catastrophic, really, Jack. And you really feel for farmers that are really badly affected by it.
Yeah. And Aidan, we talked about it previously in terms of, you know, minding paddocks that have been grazed difficulty, the kind of first time round, you know. I mean, a lot of guys now at this stage, here we are kind of the middle of April, they are going back into ground that has been grazed because, you know, to one extent, maybe some of the heavier paddocks have been closed up because it's too much grass on them, etc. And they're having to go back. And look, at temperatures are coming up, like places are growing, like, you know what I mean? Like,
there's and the only positive you say is there's plenty of grass out there just to get the conditions to go out and graze it. Second round grass is very tender, Jack. It's, you know, they were damaged, you know, and that was grazed in February, was damaged as well. So that ground is really, really tender. So you need to be really careful going in grazing that now, because if you damage it twice, as we say in the dairy pages this week, if it's damaged twice, it's, you know, you have a 30% less grass growth over the whole season on that field. So there's a real risk there. But farmers have no choice at the same time, Jack. You know, they have to get out to grass because silage is running scarce. So it's a kind of a catch in the two situation. I suppose, look, what we're saying is go to your dryer fields first, use on off grazing, use 12-hour blocks, and just see how it goes, feel it as it go along. Like, I mean, conditions are going to get better, there's no doubt about that. We had a few pet days last weekend. You know, Sunday in many parts of the country was a really good day. There was sunshine and strong winds in between showers, albeit. But, you know, we saw land dry out in areas that got the benefit of that. So I think, you know, with the high pressure coming, we have to be positive. We have to say that things are going to get better.
And Aidan, I just seen the Grass Plus page there, and you have a couple of good operators obviously featured as well, as you do every week. But, I mean, most of them are feeding kind of 3, 4, 5 kilos a meal per cow per day. Can you see, and again, you know, can you see that continuing? Let's say things pick up as everyone is talking about. Listen, there's the change of moon, and there's this, that, and the other happening next week. Like, you know, and if you get into full swing at grass day and night, like, you know what I mean? Do you see guys staying at 3, 4, 5 kilos a meal?
No, I'd say they'll drop a bit, Jack. I'd say they'll drop back to 2 or 3 kilos initially anyway. And then, you know, for the month of April, and then maybe coming to May, then they'll go back to the 1.5 or whatever they need just to cover for tetany after that. I think the realization is dawning that, you know, there's going to be a low peak this year. So and milk price is relatively low compared to where our costs are. So margin is going to be low this year, probably lower than last year, to be honest. I think people are going to make a rational decision and say that we're not going to spend unnecessary money on buying meal because our cows aren't going to feed this year, so they're going to feed the minimum. I think I think that's fair and reasonable. Some farmers were talking about the fact that they're going to say they're going to feed more concentrate now in order to close up more ground for silage. And again, you think that makes sense, you know, that. But for me, it's a poor use of feed. You'd be much better off not buying that feed and instead buying more fertilizer and going with higher rate to grow the grass and then close it up, or else feed that silage, feed the meal that you would feed in May, in April and May at the dry period, because you're going to get a better response. It's a very poor response to feeding concentrate in order to grow more grass. You know, because the overall cow's diet will increase and they'll actually eat about half the amount less. Am I making sense by saying that?
So
kilos of nuts.
Yeah, I hear you.
Only eat 2 kilos less grass.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the one thing that's going through my mind is that, you know, will we get the typical growth rates in April and May now, given some of the damage that has been done on some farms, but maybe it hasn't been done on a lot of farms because the grazing just didn't happen. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think we will.
We'll get the growth.
I'm confident we will. We will. And if you look back at previous years, I was looking back in 1988, which was another wet spring. Yeah. And, you know, grass growth was exceptionally high all during the summer months that year. So I think we'll get the growth. Once we feed the land now, you know, so we need the fertilizer to go out, we need the P and K to go out in land that's been damaged, and you know, I think we need to make the most of what's left of the season as we can.
Yeah, excellent, Aidan. I tell you, I'm gonna leave it there at that for this week, because we have to have a chat with Lawrence Chalew on the whole clover job and low nitrogen, so we can have a chat on that. Thanks, Aidan. Right, folks, as I said, and I previewed at the top of the show, we're going to have a chat with Lawrence Chalew from Moor Park. This is on the back of an article, I suppose, that we published on the 30th of March edition. It was page 17 in the news pages. Rachel Donovan was reporting on a Chagas webinar where James Humphreys was talking about the results from Solihull Farm. And also, I suppose, Chagas are running a series of clover and nitrogen farm walks at the moment. So we just said we'd have a chat with Lawrence Chalew and Aidan in terms of what's happening there and really what's happening in Solihull and what kind of stocking rates, I suppose, we can see. The piece that a lot of farmers have gotten contact with on us in this is that, you know, effectively the headline on that article was that 2.5 cows per hectare, or a cow to the acre in language, without fertilizer is not a challenge, and of course there's a lot of farmers that effectively are, you know, carrying that stocking rate, but they're spreading maybe closer to maybe 200 kilos of bag nitrogen per hectare. So we just said we'd get Lawrence and Aidan, have a little bit of a chat about it and try and pull it apart a little bit. So let's have a listen. Hi folks, delighted to be joined by Lawrence Chalew from Moor Park and our own Aidan Brennan again to have a chat, I suppose, around the whole area of nitrogen use on dairy farms in particular. This is coming off the back of, I suppose, Chagas are doing a series of walks around clover and grass walks around the country, but also a piece that we got a lot of feedback on in the last couple of weeks. We published an article on the 30th of March, page 17 in the news pages, carrying 2.5 cows per hectare without fertilizer is not a challenge. And we said, we just to put that piece in context, that was a report that Rachel Donovan did on James Humphrey's reporting on a Chagas webinar. And just to put that piece in context, we said we'd invite Lawrence Chalew on to have a chat around this whole space, because Lawrence, it's fair to say there's a lot of farms stocked at 2.5 cows per hectare, but they're using maybe 200 kilos of bag fertilizer to deliver the grass production. Just put that piece in context for me. Carrying 2.5 cows per hectare without any fertilizer is not a challenge.
Yeah, and I suppose if we just look at the national situation, you know, we're at about 160 kilos of nitrogen per hectare on a national average farm stocked at about 2.1 or 2.15. So obviously that's not where, you know, the work is at in terms of what the research is. And just to be very clear, I suppose from our point of view, from a Chagas point of view, from a research point of view, our job is to push the boundary and see how far we can push it. And one of these areas, in particular around the solid head study, is looking at how far, you know, how much of a carrying capacity we can have on the farm when we fully feed animals, when we reduce chemical nitrogen to zero. And, you know, if you look at solid head at the moment, or even look at it over the last couple of years, you know, it has been on a journey to reduce chemical nitrogen. It has been very successful from a clover point of view, but the farm is not self-sufficient in terms of forage production. So essentially, whether there's animals going out being from a B&B point of view, or whether there's silage coming in, the farm does not produce all the forage that it needs.
Okay, so what I'm hearing there is there's more nitrogen coming into that system, we'll say, like that, stock going out or feed coming in, that kind of maybe we don't. So in terms of effective stocking rate then, Lawrence, yeah, what does it mean for solid head, like?
Yeah,
and
so
growth rates, I suppose. Match the two of them up. Yeah,
exactly. So when you look at it, and I suppose more looking at it from a utilization point of view, you know, and you look at the numbers and you look at the milk sales and you look at the cows that are on the farm and you look at the concentrate that's coming in and you look at the animals that are going out and the silage that's coming in, they're probably, you know, utilizing somewhere between 9 and 10 tons. So whatever utilization figure you want to take, 75-80%, you know, you're growing 12 ton in terms of the farm. And to be fair, that's a fairly good achievement and a very strong achievement with little to no chemical nitrogen.
Yeah. Okay, but then this piece of carrying 2.5 cows per hectare without any fertilizer, like, I mean, how real is it, I suppose, based on not just solid head, but I call it, you have a lot of work done in low nitrogen studies and clover studies down through the years. I mean, Aidan has been reporting on most of them for a long time now, like, you know, Clonakilty, your own state, you know, the base at Moor Park. So, you know, where does that bring all that together for me in terms of where it matches up?
You know, over the last couple of days, I've been kind of pulling this together and looking at it, and there's absolute clarity in the numbers. So look at it, you know, having good clover in the system, you'll grow 2 ton more, 1.5 to 2 ton more having good clover in your system. Pardon?
You know, when you say you grow 2 ton more than what?
So if you're at a base, let's call it zero nitrogen, you have a base of 8 ton. Let's say that base is 8 ton, 8.5 ton. With clover in that system, you'll grow 10.5 ton with zero nitrogen. And then for every kilo of nitrogen that you add to that system, you're talking about somewhere between 15 to 20 kilos of extra grass, depending on the level. So at the lower levels of chemical nitrogen, you will grow closer to the 20 kilos. And as chemical nitrogen goes up, that response rate reduces slightly, and you could be back to 15 kilos.
Okay.
And all of the studies, you look back over across all the studies, you know, whether it's in Moor Park, you know, we have studies going back from 2010. Brian McCarthy is doing a study currently now in Clon, and that's basically shown when you compare 75 kilos of chemical nitrogen with 150 kilos of chemical nitrogen, the response there is 19 kilos of grass for every kilo of chemical nitrogen added to the system. Kieran Hearn published a paper last year, and it basically showed that as chemical nitrogen increased, the response reduced, but the average was somewhere around 17 to 18 kilos of herbage dry matter production for every kilo of chemical nitrogen.
Aidan, from what you see in you know, going around to kind of the research side of things and going around to commercial farms, matching up that kind of getting more clover into swards, like, I mean, it's not simple. It's not straightforward, you know. I mean, and that's why I suppose the bag nitrogen piece has been so a big part of Irish dairying for the last 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, Jack, it's much easier to grow grass in the farm in general using chemical nitrogen. You know, it's the easiest, it's straightforward, it's more or less guaranteed to work regardless of the weather, you know, within reason. So it's much easier. I suppose the problem there, Jack, is that we experienced in 2022 and 2023, when the cost of fertilizer go extremely high, it becomes very hard to be able to justify spreading that fertilizer. Plus the different environmental benefit changes coming down the line in terms of water quality, climate change, all those policy instruments by government are to reduce the amount of chemical fertilizer being used on farms. So there's pressure on all sides, really, cost and policy. But Jack, you know, you have to say that, you know, the challenges of using it's Clover's farm more challenging. And I mean, I suppose some of the advice around farms to cut back on chemical nitrogen in order to get clover to start growing does reduce grass growth. Mm. And I mean, you have to say that in my experience, seeing farms that are using clover to a very high level, those that cut back dramatically in chemical nitrogen, albeit having good clover levels at farms, are still growing a lot less grass in general. Yeah. And that's costing them in terms of extra feed going in, either in the form of concentrate or purchase forage. Purchase forage is a big one, Jack. You know, that's now a part of many farm systems. It wasn't before.
Is it costing them in? But is that because their stocking rate is wrong relative to the kind of inputs that are going in? You know, the kind of way, like, is it not that the cost piece is there because the stocking rate is too high for what they're growing?
Yeah, but the stocking rate probably hasn't increased, Jack. It stayed as it was. Okay. So this is the point. Like, I mean, they're now no longer able to carry the same number of animals that they had previously because they're not using chemical nitrogen. And I think that the pinch point here is probably the chemical nitrogen in the spring. So they've decided that based on advice from some quarters that they're going to not spread any nitrogen in spring on fields that have good clover content. And okay, it's working on farms, Jack, but maybe it's working on farms that are lowly stocked. You know, to begin with, and or have a lot of silage in the system because they have a lot of, you know, an overall stock rate is quite low, so there's no shortage of feed, and they're happy to put in that silage in the springtime instead of spreading nitrogen to get the grass out in the milking platform growing, and they're sailing through then from say June, July on the rest of the year because pollen really kicks in at that point.
Okay.
But they're struggling in the springtime, and there's a lot of extra feed going in. And then they're not making the same amount of silage, and then they're having to buy in silage at the back end of the year. Now, I'm generalizing in all of these statements, Jack, but that's a classic case of what I would see. Yeah. And the way to come around that, Jen, is to reduce their stocking rate.
Yeah.
If they want to run that system profitably, you know, it does require a lower stocking rate. I think Lawrence would agree with that.
So Lawrence, pick up on that in terms of the stocking rate. And really, so if we're looking futuristically down the line, let's not talk about here and now, but like you, people are on a journey and commercial farmers are on a journey, let's say to try and get down to as low as they can in terms of bag fertilizer. Where do you see it landing in terms of the mix of clover, bag nitrogen and stocking rate?
So let's be crystal clear. We have to go on this clover journey. It's, you know, there's a whole range of reasons from an environmental point of view, from an economic point of view. So, you know, all our studies are telling us that, you know, we can reduce chemical nitrogen by 100 kilos and pretty much retain the same level of herbage production if we have good clover in the swards. And good clover is, you know, 25% on average across the swards. And that's what we need to achieve, you know, to achieve that, 100 kilo reduction. So, like, you know, that's pretty clear, and all of the studies are kind of concurring with that number. But I would be slightly worried about, you know, the message from today that clover is bad. Clover is very good. What we have to do is, as we reduce the chemical nitrogen, we have to be sure that we're able to grow enough and match the stocking rate. So if we're going to zero chemical nitrogen, like where this discussion started, stocking rate would have to be reduced accordingly, and obviously farm profitability will drop dramatically as a result of that.
But is it fair to say that I'm just thinking of the commercial, from a commercial farmer's perspective, he's looking at this headline and saying 2.5 cows per hectare, no fertilizer is possible, I'm doing something seriously wrong here, I'm spreading 200 kilos of bag nitrogen or 160 or whatever, as you say. I mean, there's something not kind of tallying here.
Absolutely, and what I'm saying, from, you know, achieving that 2.5 cows per hectare with zero nitrogen will require other forage to come in and other nitrogen to come in that farm. And that's what's been happening in Solihull. And that will increase as the Solihull farm transitions to zero nitrogen, if the study was to continue. Essentially, what we would say is that the amount of silage and winter feed coming in would actually increase over time.
Okay.
Have
we any number on that in terms of what has been coming in, Lawrence, in terms of, you know, what's the additional nitrogen effectively coming into the system, though?
So, you know, if we look at it, we would probably estimate that there's the guts of a ton of dry matter to a ton and a half of dry matter coming in to retain that, to maintain that system on a utilized, a ton to a ton and a half to maintain that system.
Okay.
And that's you know, that's part of the study. That's the part of the output from the study. You know, and reporting that is going to be really important, that farmers understand that they, what they can and can't achieve
Yeah. Aidan, you visited the Solihull farm, and this isn't all about Solihull, obviously, you know what I mean? But, I mean, they've been working, and they're going down the Clover Road with a long time now at this stage. It's, you know, it's 30, 40 years that probably they're a good bit ahead of commercial farmers, even though a lot of commercial farmers are trying to kind of take the messages from there and run with them now straight away.
Yeah, I mean, I watch Solihull closely, and you know, you have to admire the work that's going on in terms of the emphasis on getting clover established farms. Just to pick up on Lawrence's point, I suppose, when I was saying some clover farms aren't growing as much, it's a springtime element that I'm really talking about. So it's a zero nitrogen in spring, I think, is the pinch point in those farms. I think we've no issue cutting back nitrogen dramatically for the second half of the year, but it's the message that they should be cutting back or not spreading any nitrogen in spring is the main problem. But to go back to Solihull, Jack, you know, it's a unique farm, like, so it's like an extremely high soil fertility, and I mean extremely high. And that's to do with his historic practices in the farm. You know, it was part of it's owned by a meat processing plant, Tipperary Quap, you know, our owners of farms was in these geographies the last 30 or 40 years. But historically, there was a lot of additional nutrients going out to that farm. So P and K, if we were to take an index of P and K, I'd say it'd be more like 7 or 8 on the soil index as opposed to 3 and 4, you know, to put that in context. So that's important when it comes to clover. Like, it's an ideal farm for clover to grow on. There's exceptionally high clover levels on the farm. And anyone that goes to Solihull is really impressed with the level of clover that's in the farm, and if nobody can deny that. But can the same be replicated in farms? Is the point, I suppose, that you're raising, Jack, or that farms that are bringing into us are raising about that?
Correct.
Is it directly comparable that you can just go down the zero nitrogen route and grow the same level of yield to maintain 2,500 per hectare? I think, as Lawrence has proven here today, even with all the benefits in terms of soil fertility and clover content, that can't be achieved because the stocking rate, you know, would be more like 2.7 cows a hectare, you know, based on the level of utilization that's been achieved in soil.
Yeah. Lawrence, you would accept that the soil fertility piece and, you know, what's happening in Solihull is you know, it's not changing the game, but it's the results that are coming out of there are very particular to that farm.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's part of that farm history from a history point of view, and I suppose from the farm point of view, and that's why I was focusing probably a little bit more on the other studies that we've done across different sites that are that are given those response numbers that we expect to get and what we've got in the other across the other studies. I suppose one point that we probably haven't touched on is the level of clover in the sward. Aidan mentioned it. You know, again, you know, we saw these issues last August, you know, where there's extremely high levels of clover in some swards. They may result in problems from a bloat point of view. And that's something we need to avoid because, you know, we don't want farmers, on edge all the time. They've had enough of that this spring. Having more of that is not something that we want farmers to be. So, you know, those levels of clover are you know, have to be managed as well, you know.
I mean, and it is a point, and it turns a lot of people off the clover piece to an extent, Lawrence, in terms of that bloat piece and managing it. And I know from experience and from year work as well in Clonakilty that like a nice bit of work goes into managing that bloat piece during the main grazing season with fencing and various different bits and pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the most important part there is to manage the level of clover in the sward. You know, once you have that, not at too high extreme, you know, not up at, you know, some swards were up at, you know, greater than 50% last August. Once you're, you know, in a better place from that point of view, you're less likely to have issues. And then there's...
Oh, that's difficult to do as well, isn't it? You know, it's difficult to kind of, I call it, you know, reduce...
Manage.
You know, that quantity of clover, as you say, 50% is huge, you know, the kind of way, like, but you have it and the weather materializes and everything comes together at the one point. It's kind of hard to kind of just turn the tap off to an extent, like.
But I suppose in pasture or swards that are getting a certain amount of nitrogen, they generally don't go to those levels. That's, you know, it's okay. That's what we're seeing. Like,
that's how you're regulating it.
A little bit. Yeah.
Excellent. Look, folks, I think it's been worth having the chat because we've got a lot of feedback on it. And I think we have brought a bit more clarity to the piece. Like there is huge benefits there, but it's a journey that a lot of farmers are on, and it's a lot of farmers are not there yet, but it is very interesting and it's very good to watch, and we continue to do that. Super. Thanks, Lawrence. Thanks, Aidan. Chat to you soon. Right, folks, very interesting chat there with Lawrence Chalou from Moore Park and our own Aidan Brennan on the whole Clover piece. And look at a lot of the feedback we got on the on that article on the stocking rate and the Clover challenge. Good to bring a little bit more insight into it and to, you know, to see that, you know, there is more feed, there is more nitrogen coming into that system. Okay, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us make this show happen. Thanks to you for watching and thanks for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan, and indeed Lawrence Chalou, our guest this week. Thanks again to you for any questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868366465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcasts. We'll be back again next week. We're hoping that the weather will be a little bit better. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.